Hi, I'm Leithan Hines, and this is How to Fall Apart, a podcast about picking up the pieces. This is our first episode in quite a while, so maybe just a reminder. This is a podcast of conversations with people who have been through something challenging, about how they coped, and also the times that they struggled to cope, and what that felt like. From now on, I'm going to be putting this podcast out first and foremost through my new Substack, also called How to Fall Apart, where my writing will also sit. You can subscribe at the link in the episode show notes. The podcast will also mainly be available on all the usual podcast platforms, although some episodes may be partly or entirely behind the Substack paywall and available only to my Substack subscribers. So, with that business end of things out of the way, I'd like to introduce my guest this week. Subi Lynch, who you may know from her beautiful Instagram account, Standing by the Wall, talks to me about getting a diagnosis of ADHD in your 40s. We discuss what led her to the point of getting a diagnosis, going through that process, how it gave her a new understanding of herself, and learning a new way to live and not be too hard on yourself. If you know Subi, you'll know she is the most generous, supportive of people, and I am so grateful to her for sharing her story here for the first time. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Okay, so what I wanted to ask you first is, what led to you getting your diagnosis? What was it that made you think?
You see, already I'm like ADHD, haven't prepared, can't even remember, can I? Yeah.
That's okay. We can take our time.
Let me have a think. Do you know what? It probably was social media. I don't want, you know, there's that whole narrative going now where it's just like everybody's looking at social media and being like, I definitely have that self-diagnosing. But I guess it probably is because you kind of start seeing yourself in things, you start seeing yourself in reels and TikToks and being like, oh, wait, like, is that me? But of course, then you see yourself in stuff that you're like, oh, I'm like that, but that isn't me in other, you know.
And what were the things that you might have been seeing that felt, okay, that reflects me back at myself?
Well, I get, do you know what? It probably was lots of things that I saw as negative in my personality, like the kind of being all over the place, the chopping and changing from one thing to another. And then the never, like always being at 99% completion of everything and then just being like, and the last 1% being such a slog. And like there was a time, like I painted during lockdown, I painted the floorboards, my whole house. There was this one square at the end of the stairs. Like I had literally spent like 6 days doing it, and then that one would have taken me 25 minutes, like 25 minutes, and it would have been done. But I just got bored, and that stayed like that for like 4 weeks. I didn't go back to it. Like,
were these parts of yourself that you would have given yourself a hard time about?
Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't have. Do you know, I also, another thing is that I would have been quite defensive about it. So I would have been like, oh, it's fine, it's fine. And I would have like maybe covered it up by being like, oh no, I'm just so laid back about that, it doesn't matter, I didn't really care about that one square of floor. But like inside I probably really cared and was like, oh no, that's really not, like, why could I not just finish it? And so but at the same time the desire to actually complete it just wasn't there. I wasn't gonna get excited about that last little bit being done, so what was the point?
And what then were the logistics of, like, from talk me through from seeing it on TikTok and thinking, okay, that's really resonating with me, to actually getting a diagnosis?
So then, well, I think I kind of started mentioning it to my close circle. Okay. So people who'd know me really well, like my husband, a couple of my best friends, and just being like, oh, maybe. And the fact that they didn't straight away, so I'd kind of go, oh, look at this, what do you think about this? Or, and oh, and did you know that it's really different in women than it is in men? My brother, and he wouldn't mind me mentioning it, he was diagnosed with ADHD when he was at school, like in primary school in the 80s. So it wasn't, you know, it was hard enough to get him diagnosed for my parents, like even then or then, and even as a boy, because I know it was showing much more in boys then or picked up much more in boys back then. And so ADHD was always like part of our family life. Like we always, like I always knew it. How it presented in boys.
In boys, yeah.
Never even slightly considered it, literally till about 2 years ago, that it might be something that I had.
Yeah.
But it always felt a little bit odd, a little bit different, and definitely, but didn't didn't know what it was. Mm. So I guess, yeah, hadn't spent a huge amount of time wondering why, but just, oh, people are different. People have different personalities and this is mine. And so, but when I started showing it to like, yeah, close people, like the stuff that I was going, isn't this a bit like me? And the people weren't going, no, that's not you.
Okay.
I was getting, oh, yeah. So again, not to be too like self-diagnose yourself using TikTok or Instagram, I did go and grab a load of books and like, of course, because one of the ADHD things is you really hyper-focus into like a subject. So for those few weeks, ADHD and whether or not I had ADHD and ADHD in women became such, I was like, oh, I want to know everything about it.
But it must have been because something that helps you make sense of part of yourself that
yeah,
maybe
but
didn't
even
make
at
sense.
This point, I wasn't
quite powerful.
I wasn't like, yeah, it was just like, oh, that would be interesting to find more out about, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wasn't totally going on, I wasn't totally believing that I definitely had it.
Okay.
And again, not in a negative way, just in a, I can't really write all those things that I don't adore about myself or things that at the time I was seeing were as negative. Can't write those off as like, oh, that's ADHD, because you know that would be too easy. So anyway, got all these books and like, you know, I feel like maybe a neurotypical person might be like, oh, I wonder if I have that, and they would get one book and they would read that book and complete that book and then they'd go, oh yeah, maybe I want to learn more about that. But I ordered like, I think it was like seven books, and it was like all the different. So it was like ADHD in girls, ADHD in women, how to manage your ADHD, because I went straight into like, well, let's see if I can just sort this all out. And then ADHD in friendships, ADHD in marriage, relationship, like your romantic relationships. Anyway, got all these books. And so then they all arrived and I like flicked through all of them. And then started reading one of them, got bored of that, moved on to the other. And I, if that's like, there you go, there's your diagnosis, because I just didn't, I don't think I completed any of them. A few of the books now knew who their audience were was going to be reading it. And they were very, hi, you're not going to want to read all of this. How, like, so you can flick to the last chapter now to see how it ends, and then you can go back. And I was like, oh, Carrie, you like this.
Yeah.
All books should be written like this.
That's lovely.
Like, yeah. And so, and then I had done like, you know, I had Googled or researched, as in like looked at hashtags to try and find out, not just like medical experts, but that they were written by people who also were neurodivergent. So, so yeah, I think because the ones that definitely appealed to me were ones that like, had been written by neurodivergent people.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of them had like, you know, had qualifications, had gone on to get qualifications as well. And maybe after this, I'll actually go home, get the books and give you a list, because obviously I did not write that down in preparation.
Of course.
So what
happened next?
So then so talking to a friend and reading some of the, I joined a Facebook group, but I came out of that as quick as I went in, because
really?
I was like, oh, it was too much. I didn't, it was too much hyper-focusing on the ADHD, probably at that stage, because I wanted to know everything about it, but only for about 3 weeks. And then I was like almost bored of it. Like I was like, okay, grand, yeah, I definitely have this, but now, like, what's next? Because like, grand, that's fine. And I wasn't upset by realizing it at all, but wasn't completely like believed I had it, but definitely did need the diagnosis to kind of feel validated in my believing that I had it. And there's this one of my friends had said self-diagnosis is a real diagnosis when it comes to neurodivergent, because usually by the time someone who is neurodivergent goes for diagnosis, they have researched it so well that and have come to the conclusion enough to go, yeah, I want to spend what ends up being a vast amount of money to like get the diagnosis. And so because vast amount of money are not accessible to everyone. You have to, like, you know, self-diagnosis has to be a valid diagnosis, because not everybody can access that. And I was lucky enough to be able to go and get privately diagnosed. So a new clinic had just opened. So I think this was maybe September of last year, a year ago.
Okay.
I sent an email, like, which again, like, things like that can sometimes be such a huge thing that I'm realizing now. I'm like, oh yeah, like, why are emails, sending emails for what I guess essentially is self-care, kind of hard. But anyway, so proud of myself sending off that email. And they were like, oh yeah, you can have an appointment within 6 weeks or 6 weeks later. And it's going to be a 3-appointment assessment. So once I had done that, I felt great for a day and was like, okay, I have my appointment. But then that 6-week wait felt very like life was on pause. Like,
really?
It wasn't. I know I went through the motions, but I definitely felt like, oh, everything's just going to be better once I get that first appointment. And it wasn't even, hadn't even totally decided about whether I'd take medication or whether I'd go to therapy, like specific like neurodivergent therapy, or hadn't made any of those decisions, or even didn't know exactly what was going to be offered. But I just needed to get to that appointment, and definitely as I got closer to it, I was like, everything's going to be fine once I have that appointment. So almost, I think what was happening was that I was unmasking in those 6 weeks.
Really?
Waiting. Like, and so I became, and to myself, so I think I became more aware of the things that I was finding hard and like allowing myself to feel it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So then, in the meantime, I started putting some practices into, I kind of started analysing what I found really hard. And so the completing task thing, like the and also prioritizing, understanding what needs to be done in what order, because I guess the because of the lack of dopamine, you're always kind of seeking that like hit that you want, and so kind of stuff that's going to make you feel really good is obviously way more appealing when you wake up in the morning, like what do I really want to do today, and you want to kind of do that straight away. But you know, like, laundry needs to be put on, dishwasher needs to be emptied and like filled after breakfast. Then you need eating, you need to eat, you need to make meals. You need to like answer those emails, and then you can go like out to the gym or like do the fun stuff that you kind of want to do, meet a friend for brunch or whatever. And so I was like, what is overwhelming me? What am I not getting done, then what would make my life easier? So I made these little cards for myself, so that I could kind of keep on top of like I kind of divided my life, I guess, into little sections. And it took a few weeks. I guess it was probably a little project to kind of keep me busy. So there's like the housework-y cards. So I'll just use them as an example.
Yeah.
So now I went into, like, say, the living room, and I'm like, okay, well, in the living room, like, you know, floor needs to be hoovered, then the floorboards need to be mopped, couch needs to be reset, and remote controls put away. Like, literally, like, broke all the little jobs into little tiny mini chores. Like, some of them only take, like, a couple of minutes or a minute, and made a little checklist. So when I go into that room, I just follow it, can put a little tick beside it, and I get that little dopamine hit of,
I'm getting a dopamine hit just listening to that. It's so calm.
So I made a little kind of collection of all these cards and laminated them. Really enjoyed that. It's amazing the like where you'll find your kicks. And use those, and still do. And then add to that. So now, like, as like new work that I do, new like as each project comes up, make a little laminated card that kind of because there's nothing like ticking off a checklist for me anyway.
And as someone with a 3-page to-do list on the go, I highly relate.
I mean, I always have that too, and there is always the list.
But
that
this is different.
Haunting me that yeah. is never getting looked at because it's not going to give me the,
yeah,
the same.
Yeah.
But at least if I've got my other little daily / weekly cards
yeah.
that I'm going through, at least I'm feeling like, yay.
And can I ask you, in that time waiting for the diagnosis, as you mm-hmm. found yourself becoming a little bit more kind of maybe conscious, did you start realizing some of the coping mechanisms that you had put in place?
Yeah, really. That became really like a huge part of conversations myself and my husband were having as well.
Okay.
And it was actually really nice because it definitely opened up loads of, oh, you know the way I do that and it's really annoying. Like now I was annoying myself, I have to say, because I was like, well, that's just my ADHD. And it became a kind of almost running joke.
Yeah.
Like, and we were kind of like, it was, yeah, it became a line. Like, I'm like, oh, I can't get up to get myself a glass of water because I'm ADHD. Can you get me one, please? but yeah, so it was kind of being said almost in a jokey way, but also it became like a conversation starter if there's like something that was, that I was doing that was like irritating me and him or me and the kids. I'm like, oh no, but do you know why I find that hard? It's because of, you know, whatever, something that I'd read, or able to show him. Sometimes I do think that the people, the neurodivergent people who make TikToks and who make ADHD or autism and TikToks to explain it to neurotypical people actually are like huge heroes, because and there's that amazing hashtag actually autistic that autistic people write about life so that neurotypical people can understand.
Yeah.
And they're flipping heroes because it is, of course it's hard to understand if you don't have the same brain. And it's really nice to be able to go, oh, I can't explain it articulately, but this person has done it brilliantly in this hilarious video. Have a look. And so definitely social media did help and did help explain it.
And what would have been some of the coping mechanisms that you can see now looking back that you'd built in?
Well, do you know what? One thing that is I was trying to keep control of everything.
Okay.
So to feel like I was good.
Yeah.
Or I normal, whatever, all inverted commas, of course. Like, I would stay up till like 3-4 o'clock in the morning to make sure the house was perfectly tidy and clean. And it was like immaculate. And then, and get to that 99% of everything being done. And wouldn't like, just was doing that so that the next morning I would feel like, okay, I managed. I did that. Also definitely the staying up late thing and working late and tidying, cleaning and doing my work late. Is, it turns out, a coping mechanism, because I guess growing up, if you've been living without a diagnosis have found things hard, you feel sort of that people are watching you and judging you, that like, that's not the way, that's like,
yeah.
Why is it taking them so long? Why does that chore that should only take like 20 minutes, why is it taking them an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Because it's executive function just getting in the way and just like having issues with that. So that, like, I love to, yeah, have nobody else around. And I, like, if you've got a family, it's not until late at night when everybody's asleep.
Okay.
So that was definitely a coping mechanism that I think I've been using my whole life, is waiting until the house is empty, waiting until everyone's in bed, and then doing all the things that I feel like I need not to be watched doing.
Yeah.
So now that I'm aware of that, I like was able to talk to my family about it and like, you know, but also to not worry too much about like having to, you know, sometimes prioritizing sleep is good.
Yeah.
And like, and being like, it's okay if like that's a bit messy going to bed, there's tomorrow. Like,
yeah.
Or
okay,
you know, you can answer that email, they're in bed, they're not going to get that reply like now at 4 a.m. just wait until tomorrow, send it then.
So that need for kind of control, you were able to kind of
look
at slightly.
Just, and it, and that it's, and not to be judging myself as harshly maybe on how everything looks from the outside.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
You mentioned at one point, we were chatting probably a book club, about your Instagram and how you changed your approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, I mean, you're one of the most creative people, I think, on Instagram, but you mentioned kind of that, but in the past, the extent that you might have gone through, is that part of what you're describing there? Of,
do you know, I never felt like I needed, I don't think I was ever like showing like what I like showing something different than what I was. But so I guess when like I would take a photo of, you know, something that looked pretty perfect, like a super tidy laundry room, like who has one of those? And like it's tidy and clean or whatever, but then you need to take clothes out. And I wasn't putting up photos of all the clothes on the counter. You know, I would take the photo beforehand. But that, I guess, I don't think I was ever giving the narrative like how, oh, this is how it is all of the time.
No, you weren't at all.
It was definitely more of a, look how nice this can look, this space can look. And so it definitely was, that was more kind of creep, like almost styling a shot, I think. And I think I am, so now have I changed a little bit, I guess, but maybe that's just because now there is laundry on top of the counter in the laundry room all the time because I've kind of let go of that absolute control, like I'll just go to bed and like fold those clothes tomorrow sometimes and okay. You know, and it's fine and I don't feel as stressed about it, I think.
Okay.
So definitely have changed my Instagram a bit, but I don't have my kids on there as much now. Again, I've spoken to the two of them about it and like, do you want me to hide all the photos? They're like, no. They actually like, no, we like them. And, you know, so that's a constant conversation. So, yes, I'm putting myself up there more and just being myself more. But that's because I think I've found out who I am more now.
Yeah.
In the last year. So
I got the sense from what you said was it felt like you were putting yourself under less pressure. Like I think you'd said it specifically in the context of rather than making like a birthday cake that had like 6 million layers and was perfect, but that you were just like, I'll just make a sponge cake and I know this is fine. And it was more, it wasn't that you were trying to show anyone else anything. It was an internal pressure that you were kind of putting on yourself.
Absolutely. Like I thought that I wasn't, like again, that word good. I wasn't a good mom, a good friend, a good like anything unless I did everything perfectly. Whereas now I think, I mean, probably there are like some people around me who are like, no, actually, could you just put a bit of effort into that again? I liked it when you put the effort in. but you know, now if I'm like running out the door to like somebody's birthday, I'm like, okay, like I don't have a card, but like, you know, I got this present, it's not wrapped, but like, you know, it's me, it's fine. Whereas before I actually probably would have been like an hour late because I would have wanted to have the card written, like to have everything wrapped, bow on it, perfect, and wouldn't have felt right. And so like, is it not better to kind of just to be on time and like, you know, be on time and show up more authentically as myself than and not stressed. Yeah. And just being like, hi,
that's what you said. You were talking about kind of being in the moment more rather than, And so there were three appointments for when it came to getting the diagnosis. Tell me about that.
So the first one is it's a really long one. So you're kind of there all morning you're there for a good few hours. So it's, you get your like medical exam, like they do a proper, because if you are going to go down the medication route, they need to check your heart, they need to check your blood pressure, like everything, because it's strong medication. And they need to just make sure that your body is healthy enough to be able to take the medication that you would be getting if you go down that route.
Okay.
So you get like a full check. And they're so lovely. They were so lovely and, you know, very like listening to everything that you want done or not done. And then you go and you chat to a GP. And so the GP had kind of done, like learned lots about ADHD, so that was kind of where they wanted their speciality to kind of go into. So so that was, you fill in a questionnaire to start with, so that's kind of your self-diagnosis questionnaire. And I think I might be totally wrong, but I think there were like 20 questions, but I know that the only one that I said, like that I was just like, oh no, that definitely isn't me, is it was like, you find it difficult to sit still, and that you're like, you know, your body starts moving, you need to get up and down. And I was like, oh no, I can sit for like 10 hours if I'm on a project, I will forget to pee, I'll forget to eat, I'll forget to. So I was like, so the hyper side of things for me definitely is my brain. Like my brain is going in a million miles.
Okay. And I'm
like, I have to have like 15 to 20 projects in my head or I'm just bored. But I definitely can sit still like for vast amount of time. So that was definitely the one that I was like, that isn't me. But again, so that was like, but everything else I kind of was like often or all the time, you know,
okay.
Often or always across the little, the few options. But that was the only one that was never. So, and then you just sit there and chat for a few hours about
really?
Literally everything. And there's a few prompts, you know, what happened in your childhood, mm-hmm. you know, what was school like? And like one of the things is like, do you drive fast? And I was like, no, I'd be quite rule abiding when it comes to like the law. Cause again, I want to be good. But then I like roller coasters. So, you know, that's, you know, so.
Okay. So
that there's that need for speed kind of thing. And then, what else were the other questions? It was literally everything. So it was very therapeutic. Did I get upset at all? I don't think so. I don't think I got upset during that one, but definitely it afterwards. I was kind of thinking back to how I'd phrased things and how I'd said stuff and being like, oh, I didn't know I felt like that about that. So again, just childhood stuff or I was interested in the things that came up that felt necessary to tell this person so that they would know how things had been hard or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So,
okay.
And I don't think that I had a really hard time at school academically. But now I know that I was trying like 120% to keep up to be able to prove my academic abilities, I suppose.
Okay.
So like I'd be spending more time doing things like, you know, spending more time having to organize myself. And secondary school I found very hard, even though.
So tell me about that. Okay. Yeah. Before we go on to.
So my primary school was a small enough school. I think there was like 30 odd in the class, but it was a small enough school. So, and I had a good group of friends and like best friends. And all from the area, like where I grew up. And then my secondary school was much bigger. I just found that really hard. I wasn't, like, I definitely found it hard to find my group, find my gang.
Okay.
Did I find schoolwork hard? I don't know. I don't think, like, I always did okay. I always got okay marks. Without having put in like the effort that I probably should have been putting in. So I was always doing fine. And so I think that helped me kind of keep under the radar of like, you know, nobody was kind of going, oh, that's weird that they're getting, you know, low marks and everything. I think they just, I don't know. Yeah.
Can I ask you about that socially, about how you think, or do you think that ADHD might have impacted you socially as a teenager?
Now I do. See, I wouldn't change any of my friendships because, you know, I have them still. Like, I still have my very close best friend is still my best friend. I met her in secondary school. And so, like, I wouldn't change that. But I still feel that all teenagers feel a bit like, where's my gang? Where do I fit in? So even if you are in the super popular gang in school, are you still kind of going, do I feel popular? Am I in this gang? You know, so I don't know if it really would have changed a huge amount. And maybe if I had have had a diagnosis earlier, would I have felt other like in school, whereas I was kind of able to coast just being like, as far as I was concerned, a bit weird and like a bit on the outskirts of groups of gangs of friends, but
Can you see, looking back, was there a level of stress or strain that you were under? Like you talked earlier about coping mechanisms and masking. What were you doing that back then in a way that was causing, like, causing any kind of...
Yeah, like I think I have been doing it just my whole life.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware I was. So like I didn't know I was, you know, finding things difficult because of ADHD, obviously. So I just thought, oh, I just find this hard. Like, I find this scenario hard.
So what kind of scenarios would you mind?
So, well, one thing that, like, again, my best friend and I just laughed at all the time. I never, like, again, it was this need for perfection. So when we'd leave a class, you know, in secondary school, suddenly moving from classroom to classroom between subjects.
Yeah.
You know, I could never kind of see that, you know, class is about to wrap up. So I wasn't picking up on cues of, like, you know, the teacher's wrapping up this class, obviously. Like, you know, this is the end of the subject. We're moving to another subject. I wasn't picking up on those cues at all. So literally when the bell would go, I'd be like, what? This is so, again, not time blindness, I suppose, was a big thing. Like not knowing 45 minutes is up now. So then getting my bag packed up, I couldn't just shove everything into my bag and go. Everything had to be like, you know, like my folder, like everything had to be a certain way.
Yeah.
My books had to be in order. And so I was always like the last to leave. Like my friend was literally always standing at that classroom door being like, come on. So that was definitely a thing. So that was, I think, yeah, not being aware of time, something that I was doing literally every day, doing, you know, eight times a day and not being able to pick up on that cue. And then also, but still having to be, have everything perfect to feel okay and ready to go into the next class. And I still would be a bit like that. Like I can't really start projects unless I have like the right workspace. Like, you know, like at the moment our house is all over the place because we've had a really busy like 6 weeks or whatever. And so like there's stuff on the kitchen table that like isn't usually there. And I definitely am not working to optimum levels because I'm like, oh wait, like, you know, I've got to like send off that form and, you know, so it's all there to remind me to do it. And again, in one way, pre-medication, I know that would have all been done because I would have stressed myself out so much to get it done.
Okay.
And so now I have medication, I'm like not putting as much pressure on myself, but maybe not being, I'm just doing things at a kind of normal pace, I suppose, and like not staying up like for like 16 hours trying to get everything get everything done, because I'm now more aware of what actually can get done in an 8-hour working day or what can get done in like a.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So in some ways I'm more efficient and like getting through more things. But then in other ways I'm kind of being a bit more paced, and so
and in that sense
kitchen table's a bit messy.
Is the voice in your head that you kind of mentioned there a minute ago kind of talking to yourself, is it less hard? Are you being less hard on yourself, do you think? Can you see a difference?
Really trying to be,
yeah,
but I guess like 41 years of like or 40 years, because like I do think definitely the last year has changed so much. And but even when I kind of say to myself, oh no, like that's fine, it's just because you know, you're like your brain works differently to how you thought it did. It's okay that you do it like this. And I'm still like, yeah, but I used to be able to, like, I used to be able to still manage. So to get, so like, just come on, do it. So I don't think I've really completely gone.
No, I don't think that kind of thing is.
Yet.
Yeah, it's always like, a bit of a work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned medication. So let's talk about, so there was the first appointment and then the second and the third.
Yeah, so it isn't until the second appointment that you get your, so you talk then to a, it must be a psychiatrist, yeah, because you're given, you're given a, like a prescription then at the end if you have, so you leave the first appointment kind of with your diagnosis, like the GP will say, I do think that you have ADHD and I'm putting you forward for the next appointment with the psychiatrist that will, then you can talk whether or not you'd like medication. What are you thinking? And I'm like, oh, I was, you know, I'm kind of open to whatever you guys recommend or whatever.
Okay.
So then the next appointment is a few weeks later, and that couple of weeks, again, wasn't as hard as the waiting for the first appointment.
Okay.
But also did feel a bit like, wait, is everything going to be amazing once I go on these meds? So I was kind of looking out for, oh, will I be able to do this? And will I be able to do that?
Mm.
And like, spoiler, yeah, like they really have changed my life completely. So, but anyway, so you go to, I went to the psychiatrist then, and it isn't as long an appointment. So they have all the notes and everything that, and that self-diagnosis thing that you filled in, that was kind of being waved around, being like, oh, look, you know, you said always there, and you said, and I'm like, yeah, like that's, it's all accurate. And so then they recommend what medication, there's like a few different medications, and they recommend what they think would suit you best based on what you've told the GP. And so then you start a really low dose, and then, but they give you a plan for, like, you know, you're going to take this number of megs for the next week, and then next Thursday start this, and then like, and so you're building up. And they said what sort of amount they think I'll probably settle on, but they'd wait and see, you know. So I went off and started, and then the third appointment is how you've got on.
Okay.
So so by the time I got to the third appointment, I was on like nearly the dose they expected me to be on. So I was a few megs lower than that.
Okay.
And I was like, oh yeah, this is great. I like have seen a huge difference. I can't get over the difference. Like it took a few, like I had a few like settling in days. I had a couple of headaches and I found it hard to go to sleep, but only for like a week. And only like, I'm usually, by the time I go to bed, I'm super tired and will fall asleep fairly easily once I like turn on a podcast or whatever. And so I found, I was finding it just a bit longer to go to sleep. It wasn't that I was tossing and turning or anything.
Okay.
And so they were my only, and I had a dry mouth, which actually I'm going to take some water now. That symptom hasn't gone away. I still have dry lips and dry mouth.
Really?
On and off a little bit. Yeah. But it's worth it. So I was like, yeah, so it's all great. And they were like, okay, cool, great. We'll go off and you're due to go up into the next megs. I'm just not saying amounts because I think it's kind of, you know, you know, I don't really want to.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Like I don't, yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to the actual medical stuff. And so then a couple of days later, I went up onto the higher dose and it was horrible. I didn't like it at all. Okay. It felt really, I felt kind of spaced out a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just sitting at my kitchen table and I was like, kind of the world was spinning. Now that sounds like I was kind of fainty. I wasn't fainty. It just felt, I was just felt like I was on kind of, yeah, illegal drugs. That's kind of what I imagine it to be like. It was like, ooh, I just didn't like it. And I was like holding on to the kitchen table being like, this is weird. I have to just do emails here. And I feel like I need to be dancing this off or playing loud music. So I didn't like that feeling. So I rang them and left a message with the reception. Probably, actually, that day I left a few voice notes for friends. So I kind of was hyper, I guess. And like, I remember listening back to them a couple of days later and I was like, whoa, it's really quite hyper. So that was just a tiny bit too high for me. So it was just, but it was easy to like realize that just a few, a little bit lower dose was optimum, whatever. So yeah, rang them. They were like, oh, just stay. That's a, it's a weird dose that you fit, that you've like found to be comfortable for you. Most people are either a bit below or a bit higher, but if that's the dose for you, grand, like stay, go with it. And so yeah, so I've been on that dose now since then. And then they rang up a few weeks later and they said, what have you, have you any things that you're still struggling with? And I was like, well, I have not managed to give up on my phone addiction. That seems to be, I'm still kind of doom scrolling and definitely wasting time. And I don't know if that's like, if I'm, if that's just a habit left over from dopamine seeking by being on my phone. I was like, but also my job means that I have to have a phone or two on the go at all times. So, and I use it for, you know, like, again, I can kind of almost now hear myself making excuses to you. Like, and I use it for, like, you know, being inspired and create, like, seeing, like, creative ideas. Yeah, exactly. So they were like, oh, well, you can, you could maybe do cognitive behavioral therapy for that. if you wanted to. Well, first of all, the woman who I was on the phone to, who wasn't someone who I'd been talking to before then, it was a different doctor, was like, oh, just put your phone in your bag. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, no, thank you. I'm probably going to need a bit more, more
so
than
you
just...
had identified a kind of addictive.
Yeah. So I think I would definitely have where I definitely would have an addictive personality. And because I can't, like, I definitely found it hard to regulate kind of anything that I really enjoy. I kind of find it hard to stop. So, like, you know, even like even nights out, just go home. Everybody else is going home. Just go home. It's okay that the night is over. You've had a great time. And yeah, like, just, yeah, everything really. If I really like it, I will.
Which is difficult because you use your phone so much for your work.
So I did take her brilliant advice of putting my phone in my bag. I would start leaving it in different rooms. Again, it's but it was really interesting actually to analyze that it was a prop. It is. I'm not even saying it was, because I've not fixed it completely at all. It definitely, I was getting physical, like, ooh, I want my phone back. Like,
really?
Like, even when I was like, oh, will I give it to my husband? Like, I did not, that I really wanted to drag him into, like, hey, can you fix this problem for me? Or, like, put it on anyone else. But it was like a physical ache of, like, I don't want to do that, because then I can't get it if I want it, you know? And and so it really strong, like trying to get off an addiction, I suppose. And so that, I haven't fixed that. And I haven't done the cognitive behavioral therapy, because the woman gave me a phone number over the phone and I wrote it down somewhere. Haven't a clue. Like, it's in some notebook that was in the car that day when I was like sitting in a car park, and I haven't gone looking for it. But maybe,
so
I will.
You said
today,
a minute ago, that the last year, like, there have been so much changes.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Well, do you know what? I think, like, the main thing at home anyway, now I tell the kid, like, we now have, like, phrases and words that we use that we all are benefiting from them being in our family life.
Okay.
So, like, I know one of the things I was getting cranky kind of around 4 or 5 o'clock, like, which, you know, when they're only getting in from school at like 1:30, 3 o'clock, it's kind of only an hour before I was going to get all like me like, and just not being the nice mom that I want to be for them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so now I know that, like, it was because I was burnt out by then. Like, I was having like a kind of a, probably like a lack of whatever is going on, you know. I was kind of starting to shut down and needed kind of another, like, boost to get through the rest of the evening. And I would get kind of, like, the noise of them playing and stuff was just kind of kind of irritating me. Like, it sounds horrible, but, you know, I explained it to them, and I explained, I was like, it's not you guys. It's not like they're amazing. And I was like, it's not you guys. It's just that, like, any noise that is kind of background noise is going to kind of make me kind of, it's a physical, like,
great,
like, yeah. And so now we use sensory overload, like, when we looked into it, and, like, we were like, oh, what do we all look for as, like, the four of us in the family, like, what do we all need? And so, you know, one or two of us in the family are sensory seeking, and that's how they kind of, like, you know, kind of calm themselves. And then I think myself and another member of the family is more like getting, like, kind of coming away from sensory stuff. So I have, like, earphones that, like, they aren't they don't, like, block out all noise, but, like, they're on. And, you know, I've heard, like, some of my friends are like, oh yeah, like, I'll put in my earbuds and stuff, and so that the kids don't know that I'm, like, but I'm, like, very much, no, I want them to see that, like, I'm having, like, sensory overload. I've got my earphones on, there's nothing playing, or there is something playing, depending, you know. And that's just them to know that I'm taking, like, half an hour, like, I will, like, one ear off if they need to, like, I can hear them, but I'm calming down. It's
so
not
they
even,
see you kind of managing.
Yeah, and I want them to know that that's okay. And, like, and we have a sensory basket that, like, we all use, and, like, it's got, like, we've all got various things that we use in it. And so if any of us are having like little
meltdowns.
I think
I saw a picture of this and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. And like, and it changes like this different stuff. Like, you know, my 6-year-old will be like, I think this will be great for the sensory basket. Mm-hmm. There's no rules about the sensory basket. Like sometimes it's like, really? Okay, we're having conkers in the sensory basket. Fine.
Yeah.
I have stones from the beach that like they're everywhere. Like, and so, yeah. So again, maybe that is a bit sensory seeking of me as well, that there's certain textures and stuff that I like that will calm me and stuff. And and just kind of, yeah.
Can I ask you about how your own kind of mental well-being has been impacted in the last year?
Yeah. It's been a huge thing, I suppose, to kind of take on, to kind of become really, kind of getting to know myself, I suppose. So it has been a really good thing. One of the things I think that has become apparent is I used to be treated for anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so the treatment for that is like a really low dose of antidepressants. Like really, that's kind of how my anxiety, or like now I think maybe that was misdiagnosed. I don't think I was anxious in a the usual medical anxiety diagnosis way. I think I was just overwhelmed trying to cope with all the masking, all the stuff that I was struggling with without knowing that I needed help or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's been really nice to be able to kind of come to terms with that and look back and be like, oh, okay, like, you know, one of the things with the anxiety medication was that I just kind of was numb for while I was on that medication. I didn't really have any emotions. Like I was never super happy and I was never super sad, even at super sad times or super happy times. I was just kind of, numb is probably, and at the time, I don't think I knew that, but now looking back, I'm like, oh, so now I have emotions, which has been quite the thing, because I will like cry at like sad stuff on TV and all, but like laughing and giddiness and proper, you know, like that laughing that you, where you just can't stop laughing. Mm. Like, I'm like, oh, I hadn't done that in like lots of years. And it wasn't because life was sad. It was because I just wasn't feeling those major emotions in a big way. So that's been really nice too.
Something that people mentioned in the research that I was doing before this was that when they were at that point that you're describing and they were kind of looking back and realizing ways in which their life had been impacted that they're only kind of clear on now, that there was a sense of grief for them in kind of realizing, oh, okay, that was because of that and that was difficult for me at the time and I kind of understand that now. Was that something that you experienced?
Like, I guess I'm trying to look at this as only positive.
Sure.
Because it's nobody's mistake. It's nobody's, you know, it's not my teachers, it's not my parents, it's not anybody's fault really that I wasn't diagnosed till 40. And because like it's just, you know, it just there's no point in being like it just wasn't. And so now I'm lucky now that I'm like, okay, now I get to do the rest of my life with the diagnosis and with all the help that I can now get for myself. So I don't really feel sad. I feel like, because I don't think anything would have overly changed. I wouldn't really want anything to have overly changed. Like maybe, you know, like one of the things that I definitely do is that when I'm done with, like if I'm really enjoying some like job or career, and once I, like I'll know when I'm done, when I'm like, no, that's, I don't want to do that anymore. And I'll change, I'll move, I'll like, definitely it could be looked at as a bad thing because, you know, I'm not going to have the same, you know, I didn't like leave school, study something, go on and do the same career and like right into retirement. And, you know, there are benefits, of course, to that. But I wouldn't change that. Like I wouldn't, I can't imagine my personality like it just would never have suited me.
No, that feels like very much the core of who you are.
Yeah. So I wouldn't want any of that to have changed. So it's really hard to, like, I don't think I feel sad about it at all.
And something else that I noticed was there's a tension between this idea of like, and maybe this is something that comes from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is something that can be fixed and I'll like get my diagnosis or get, but actually what people then sometimes actually find is it's more a what's nicer is to land on a sense of acceptance. So yeah. Rather than like, this is something that needs to be fixed in me, it's more, I heard a lot of people kind of talking about accepting it and that this is actually who I am.
Yeah, like I sense. Think it's very cute. Much just out of this is just, yeah. Yeah, it's just me. And but I think what it does is that it can help me explain my little ways to people yeah. a little bit. But then also, I'm always kind of interested when I can hear myself saying it out loud in like random scenarios, like being like, oh, I have ADHD. Mm. And it's like, it's almost like I'm kind of glad and sort of proud of myself that I've managed to get the diagnosis mm. that it can, that it's like, because it is, yeah, it's just part of me now. Like, mm. and I mean, it has been, but now it is a thing that I can kind of confidently say, this definitely is part of my personality. And mm. not even looking for allowances, but just like, oh, you know, if you want to get to know me, that's part of the thing that you need to know about me. That's part of it, kind of thing. So, yeah.
I think that's everything. I've just looked through and you've literally answered every question and note.
That'll be the ADHD.
No, that'll be you being an amazing communicator, Susie. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks for
really,
having me. Yeah.
God, no, I could listen to you all day. You are just amazing. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this conversation and would like to hear more or read the How to Fall Apart column, you can go to my Substack, also called How to Fall Apart.